Flash Passport. Hey, hello, my lovely podcast friends. How are you doing? How's your life going on? It's the final day of the week, and I really, really, really hope you had a lovely week. If I look back at my week, it was reasonable. I lost the partnership for the trainings in the Netherlands, but I have for 75% an English training credit I will bring out myself, just to see how that goes and what to get it from it. I got also the Dutch training ready. I will simply kick the Dutch training as a video on YouTube and refer to my English training. Why not try to sell the English version if you give the Dutch version away? And to my English report about Bitcoin and the blockchain technology. So that's just about for me to have a look at it and try it. It's a pity that it failed, but the home improvement works of this week took a bit too long. It seemed to be a bit too tough to get the paint off. The guy that did all the painting outside was the neighbor. Yeah, the same guy that I expect, and very strong, and it should be really amazing to see how that he has nothing to do with all the issues that happened earlier this year. But basically, he put on a lot of thick, fat painting and did it the easy way, which basically means that I do think that I can do a better painting job. And if the partly sighted guy who can read Braille can do better painting than you can, then yeah, well, okay, I'm not a painter, so I cannot prove it for certain, but well, it's not a really great indicator. I mean, I will, if I can do it better than you and it is practical working with your hands, then let's say it like this. I got 2 years therapy to learn to knit your shoes. So that's something that I got really terrible in doing it. And all those rhetorical skills and grabbing, it's just, it sucks with me. It's really terrible. And there's no problem. That's the way I am. And look, I got my brains and I got my mouth. So what else do I need to make money? Seriously. On the other side, the report sales and the training sales on the site is going better. The average visitor level is up now by the factor 5, so that's really good. So I'm extremely happy with it, because it seems to be the case that the site we are now breaking through, and results are getting there for after all the long hard work. On today's show, I will talk with you about the royal wedding and what it has to do with vodka. And a great opportunity they had. The commodity that is likely to get an explosion next year, but we are not sure about it, and you have to look at it. The Yoon, the new Air France KLM daughter, has some problems with the union, so it's time to have a look at that one. The energy markets and the energy issues, OPEC, Russia, and all the things happening in there, because there are quite some things that we need to talk about, and OPEC is gonna meet, and there are predictions, and that's it. And we need to have a look at the copper market, because copper is really important for electronic mobility, sustainable energy, and other things. Basically, you need it. So that means that there is a great demand. So that's extremely good. And I got an interview with José Nia. I'm not really sure that I pronounced his name correctly. I tried a few times. If not, I'm extremely sorry that I pronounced your name the wrong way. And I will be more than happy to get you on again as a guest. And we're going to talk about the collapse of Venezuela and what happened in Venezuela. And because we see now the kids dying, we see the babies, we see the moms who are really bad citizens. They flee the country and they go away, and because they can't feed their kids. So that's all for today's show. It's the last show of the week. Don't forget that you can have your look at hofprofit.com. You can check, for example, how the tax-free passport is there and more of those yummy things. I look forward to hearing back from you, and let me know what you want to hear in the show, because you can tweet me via @LodewijkHof, or you can leave a comment below on SoundCloud. And I would say, let's get started, because it's your last profitable moment of the week. Social media is here. Facebook, Snapchat, Twitter, Weibo, blogging, LinkedIn, Swan, Google+. But how to use them in your advantage? Get yourself the Social Media Export Course. It's the smart point to use all social media in your advantage without burning all your time. HoffProfit.com/SMM. I say HoffProfit.com/SMM. And Prince Harry is engaged. The big word is out. The royalty press and the gossip newspapers and everyone, the celebrity guys, everyone was chatting about it, and he made his decision. He is gonna go for Meghan, and I really hope for both of them that they will have a long, prosperous and healthy life and a great marriage together with what everything that they like in their life. Having that said, then, the royal wedding could also be proven to be the royal pain in the ass for the British taxpayers and the British system. The reason is easy. Meghan is an American citizen, and she therefore is forced into the Foreign Account Tax Compliance Act. In the basic, the FATCA means, and if you're an expat, then you know one thing, FATCA means problems. That's all it means. FATCA, in a nutshell, means the following. If you're an American citizen, you should report all your foreign accounts to the tax agency. This, if you make over $300,000 a year, US, and based on Meghan's successful work as an actress and her future husband, the chance that she gets over $300,000 a year is pretty high. So, good Meghan, good for you, you did it well, you work well. I really hope you make more than $300,000 for you. But you are gonna make it. And you may need to report all your foreign accounts, everything you are entitled to or get benefits from or could get benefits from. And you need to report all the assets, including trusts, foundations, the complete funny loophole tricks that estate planners love. This means that the IRS would get access to the complete royal family finances due to Meghan. And if you would have the great idea to, well, let's give up our citizenship, well, that's something that the IRS drove already a lot of expats in. And so Obama came with a great idea, we impose an exit tax. If you leave, you have to pay a few years tax and submit the information because we don't want to lose your money. They say it's a patriotic thing to do, and yeah, let's face the fact. Expats, hardworking, hard playing, hard money earners, they are really the people that you need to push away. I mean, it makes no sense, in my opinion at least. And Meghan could be one of the next persons to give up her American citizenship. And the interesting part is that the number of state spends that imposed an exit tax is not that high. You had Joseph Stalin who did it, we had Barack Obama, we had Adolf Hitler, they all did it. And it is insane, because what you now will see is that the Trump administration is having a great chance, but some asshole, and yes, if you use violence, you're an asshole. If you're offended, good for you. You should be. But an offender, some asshole, did attack the senator who's trying to repeal FATCA. And it was Senator Rand Paul, a Republican from Kentucky. And you can say, no matter what you think about Rand Paul, I mean, yes, I agree, his father is better than he is, by far. And he was, in the last presidential run, he was playing too much the Republican candidate and the party and the boss's friends. No way that he can get it. So, but he is on a great point, and what he is saying makes sense. So just imagine, this is literally a literal story from a person I know in Eindhoven. She is on unemployment benefits. She is, because she is born in the United States, subject to the Foreign Account Tax Compliance Act. She is under FATCA. Her bank knew it, and she asked me, do you have a clue, do you know what it means? Because no one knows. And oh yeah, I know exactly what FATCA means, and FATCA means only one thing. Big troubles, because most international banks don't want American passport holders, due to this reason. And the reason that they don't want it is easy. If they want to do business in dollars, so they want to accept dollars, want to have dollar investments or whatever, but also for their customers, then they are forced to accept FATCA. Russia, Kazakhstan, China, India, Mongolia, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, Japan, South Korea, Australia, New Zealand, Vanuatu, Tuvalu all have to change their laws just to obey with FATCA. Otherwise, you would go on the world famous 303 list of the American government. It's just the, then you are in the list of Iran, so Iran, North Korea, Syria. It's a lovely list, the list you don't want to be on, at least not if you want prosperity for your people. And what I really was hoping for was that the Trump tax reform would mean the end of FATCA, that Trump would kill FATCA, that Trump would say, hey, let's make it easy. You have to pay tax from now on the money you make in the United States. And if you make your money abroad and you spend it here, hey, that's great. Do so. Go spend, go earn your money abroad and go spend it here. That's the way we like it. So, but unfortunately, that's not really, it's not passed into the tax reform. And yes, the United States needs tax reform. After basically, since I was born, they had no tax reform and they need a tax reform. It's just time for it. But what they need to do is to repeal FATCA's, start reducing all the taxes, and not only one tax, just all the taxes. And you can say you have to go make big steps. I will be satisfied with and by constitutional law imposed ongoing small reduction. So, like I said yesterday, from 33 to 32 by constitutional law every year, I will settle for it. I mean, it's not perfect, but I want to get there on the ultimate way and not on the beginning of the route. I don't want to be, I mean, we have got now Trump, and Trump is not that bad. I mean, we survived 8 years of Obama, we will survive 8 years of Trump. Trump will do great for America, that's by far something I'm certain about. But what we need to do is now just recognize the fact it's insane that the way FATCA works makes no sense. It drives expats to revoke their citizenship. It means that people with high talents, people who can make a lot of money all over the world, simply say, hey, Uncle Sam, yeah, I got my bank account in your country, I got your nickels, I got your dollars. Well, from now on, I don't want to be your citizen because I am basically being denied financial services due to FATCA. And it's, but you see, if you talk with people in banks, and frequently I do, you hear a lot of terrible stories about people that they are no longer allowed to offer banking services due to the violation of FATCA. And this is the interesting part that a lot of people don't realize. The so-called Job Act that Obama passed in the financial crisis of 2007-2008, the crisis that some people claim was caused by Bush, and I would simply say for no. It was just a natural reaction, and they should let it go, let companies go out of business and start over again. But the law, it's part of this law, so we got it over then. It's terrible, it's not driving people forward, and the only thing that FATCA is doing is keeping people down. And now the big question is, and the big thing that I'm interested in, are we going to see the royal pain in the ass, what FATCA could become for the British royal family? Will this mean that Meghan will revoke her citizenship? And will it mean that more people will simply decide from, well, I have a legal route. I can escape tax paying. I can escape contributing to the murder of people. I can take my own finances, my own chance, my own hand. I can go for my own life. And will more people do it? You see that on an average basis, the people of the United States who revoked their citizenship is a few thousand. And Meghan could be the big boost forward. Especially after Obama left office, which definitely was a great thing. But we see a small decline in people who want to revoke their citizenship. And the reason is easy. The people think that Trump has better policy than Obama, and that definitely is the case. So, if you also want to revoke your citizenship or thinking about it, check out hofprofit.com/passport. Definitely, you need to read the tax-free passport report. And no, the report is not a passport. I got a question from someone by email and who asked me, "Hey, is it a passport?" No, it's not. It's just a great document for you to read. It will inform you, it will entertain you, it will give you background about countries, allowing you to get to become their citizen by and not paying tax. And that's all you and follow some basic instructions that are there. And they are outlined in the report. You can always contact me via Twitter or SoundCloud or via hofprof.com. Just leave a message. It's all great. I mean, get those messages out. Let me know what you think about it. Because don't forget, it's there for you and I'm there to serve you. The Brexit is here. Article 50 is triggered. The talks are going on. Unprecedented change will happen. We know this, we know things for certain. The Brexit is a profit maker, at least if you are open for making some money. Get yourself the profitable Brexit report. It explains how the Brexit could happen, the economic fundamentals, finally also a few great methods to make some money on the Brexit. So, are you a profit maker? Are you someone that's open-minded when it comes to making profits? Check hofprofit.com/Brexit. And we are approaching the end of the year. At the moment of our recording, it's not... Yes, it is. It's now midnight in the Netherlands at least. So we are now midnight scenario. So it's the 1st of December. We are in the last month of the year. And you get a lot of those newsletters and messages in from, hey, this is a new big trend and this is going to make you money in 2018. And, oh yeah, by the way, I will join the same group. I will also get my own report out. Just, why not? You can make money out of it if I can share information on it and you are prepared to pay for it. Why should I not do it that way? If you don't think, if you have a reason why I should not do it, send me a tweet at Lodewijkhof or leave a message below on SoundCloud. I will be more than happy to read your answers because it's all for you. Now, but it's just when I was checking out some data and I was just wondering at once, all the traders in one commodity think it will go down. That means that if you want to go and beat the odds with information and go against it, then this means you need to check it. Don't buy, check it. And I was just thinking and looking, what the hell are they talking about? What commodity could go up? And the final conclusion was sugar. The production is going down, the demand remains steady, and all the traders are really skeptical and negative. And every time the traders and the insiders are negative, the price goes up. If they are positive, because they need to change their mind, the price goes down. Well, in that case, then this is for me a good reason to check and start investigating and start checking. And literally check. Do your research. Don't buy. If someone asked me once, I want to become a millionaire, and my answer was, oh, that's easy. You go sell chips. Fried chips, do that for 20 years, work 7 days a week between the 12 and 18 hours a day. And when you have done that for 20 years, the chance is pretty high that you are a millionaire. Yeah, I know that was not really the answer that people were looking for. I know, the idea was more, you can tell us how we get a millionaire quickly and easy. Yeah, good luck. If I know that route quick and easy, then I will go for it. But unfortunately, that route doesn't exist, so... It takes hard work, time, craftsmanship, dedication, and a desire. You need to desire. Make to yourself the pledge. I want to become a millionaire. Put it on the writing. Put it on the paper. Put the paper against a mirror. So when you shave, brush your teeth, do all those, get the deo on, all those things, get it all out. Then you can see it. You want to become a millionaire. And no, you don't want to become a millionaire. You are becoming a millionaire. And one of those things that could make you a lot of money is simply sugar. Have a look at sugar. It's really interesting. It's a soft commodity. So weather plays a role. A big hurricane, a tornado could ruin money. But on the other side, it is the way that everyone says it's going down. So when everyone says it goes down, I would say chances that it goes up, especially as it happened in the past, are pretty high. So... go for it and take it. I mean, do your research and let me know what you think about the research. I'm going to check into sugar anything in the future, and likely I will publish about it, so let me know what you think about it. All the listeners love to making some money, but you will have to pay tax upon your money. But that's to change. You can save on your tax. Pay no tax. Completely legal. Start earning more money so you can take care for your beloved ones. So you can travel visa-free. Get yourself the tax-free passport. Get yourself the starting point to a tax-free lifestyle. A lifestyle which is an ultimate freedom. HoffProfit.com/passport. I say HoffProfit.com/passport. Happy birthday to June! June is the new low-cost daughter of Air France KLM. It's the company that is gonna find a solution to EasyJet, Ryanair, Air Berlin is down, Wizz Air. It's gonna find a solution for bureaucracy, socialism and inefficient operations. So yeah, I'm not skeptical about June, by the way. I think it has a pretty good chance, but not sure about it. We have to see how it goes in execution. The idea is good, the money is definitely within the Air France KLM group, but we need to see. But today the first operations are there. They have a few destinations. They fly to Porto, Lisboa, Rome and Berlin. And yeah, definitely everyone flies to Berlin because Air Berlin is down. And the unions think going down and terminating jobs is a great thing. And people like me think getting more jobs and more activity is a good thing. But now they get out. The unions for the cabin crew are having some actions. And they are talking about all the bad things and the terrible skills that people, and the terrible working condition especially, that the union staff has to work for. And yes, if it is really terrible, they should go in. But they are complaining that the working conditions are worse than with Air France. Well, that sounds to me like something that makes sense. Air France should dramatically reduce its compensation plan for cabin crew and corporate crew, because by far it is the most insane policy. Yes, the staff is skilled, but the staff gets a bonus for speaking French. Hey, it's the aviation. The bloody system is in French, is not on French, it's on English. And I may hope that French people speak French, but I want English. To give you an idea, when I got my company and you need to fly, you just looking, can I get some benefits? So I was looking, where do I get some benefits? Hey, we got Bluebiz. That's from Air France KLM. And I was thinking, well, long distance, basically I'm going to fly to the other side of the bloody world. How do I get it in? And I got a message back. Yeah. At KLM, you could report a line and it says, oh yeah, your company is not in the Netherlands, you're incorporated in Hong Kong. Yeah, that makes sense. It makes sense for you. But our Hong Kong office has to deal with it. Their Hong Kong office was operated by Air France. And they emailed me a document from Air France, a piece of French in the sky. And they said to me, get it in, send it back by fax, telefax, or post. And do it from a Hong Kong fax number, because then we can process your application and you can do it in French. Then we can do it straight away. Mandarin, we can do it one day later, makes sense. Or English, then we will do it 2 days later. And I was just thinking, I want to have a paperless office. I don't have a printer. And that is literally so. I don't have a printer. People say I need to send a printer letter. I need to use other people's printer because I don't have a printer. And I don't want to have a printer. I want to have the paperless office. And that means having no paper. No paper at all. Get everything out. Get it printed at almost all the facilities. Get paperwork out. Send return documents. Get things in. Get things out. But let's do it digital. I mean, I get everything digital. So it's just interesting to see. And it's definitely, I'm certain that the unions are gonna try to keep June on the ground, and I do think that they gonna try with June to make some bold moves. If Air France KLM is smart on June, then it's easy. Then they go opt in for some domestic routes within Germany. Lufthansa at the moment already has 50% of the capacity that is on the market available. They filled it up, but they still make 700,000 seats available on the domestic market. sounds to me the market you can grab. You're a new low-cost airliner. Well, having some bases in France, get also some domestic routes in Germany, build up some German base, start linking France with Germany. Okay, then in that case, also link the Netherlands with it and start offer high popular routes with the people. And yeah, you're getting there. So that's the way that I should go with June. But then I'm thankfully not in charge of Air France, because there I would simply start terminating money-losing routes, money-losing staff, and simply say to the unions, I no longer speak with you. We terminate staff. Cheers. And that's a really good thing that for Air France KLM to happen, because socialism is a great system, so long you have other people money. All the listeners love to making some money, but you will have to pay tax upon your money. But that's to change. You can save on your tax. Pay no tax. Completely legal. Start earning more money so you can take care for your beloved ones. So you can travel visa-free. Get yourself the tax-free passport. Get yourself the starting point to a tax-free lifestyle. A lifestyle which is an ultimate freedom. Hofprofit.com/passport. I say Hofprofit.com. Yeah, and the OPEC is meeting. That means that the energy world is in shock again, because great things and terrible things are likely to happen. So, well, let me be clear. I think that nothing really is going to change. The OPEC is going to have a limit on this oil production. And that's it. The reason is also easy. Saudi Arabia is bankrupt. They are selling their national pride, the only really profitable company, and that is Saudi Aramco. The company needs to be sold at a high oil price, because Aramco has relative low cost oil to get out of the ground, and they can sell it. Well, with a market share of 40%, well, that's not really the big thing. They have large proven reserves, but what do you have at proven reserves when you can use them? I mean, in Venezuela is at the moment not profitable to get the oil out of the ground. Libya is having its own internal conflicts. No one really knows who's the boss there anyway. And, well, let's face the fact, from the moment Gaddafi is gone, I don't say that Gaddafi was a great guy, but it isn't going up. At the same time, Iran, the big enemy of Saudi Arabia, is scaling up production. And when the oil price gets higher, more shale energy is financially feasible. So these are quite some problems and profit opportunities for us. The problems are easy, especially for Saudi Arabia. They don't like Iran. Iran is their big enemy in the Middle East. Iran has a pretty good army, and well, basically since the 1970s, Iran was almost in war, so they know how to fight a war. Well, the Saudi army is just a soldier of fortune army. At the same time, the Saudi economy is basically non-existing. They are subsidizing everything, and they need oil revenue from it. But the oil revenue has a problem. The guys, especially in Texas and the Middle West, are making money. They are making money with shale oil. It's really great, because they are basically put up the big finger up and say to me, screw you, and they go on and make money. But then if you look at the other concerns, are Russia. Russia is not a part of the oil member. It has the largest oil reserves in the world, we think. But there were parts in Siberia where never was human, but we think it's just one big oil thing. We don't know. No one checked it. So we need to get it. On the other side, Russia already got its budgeted oil revenue price down. It is important, because the Russian government mainly gets oil revenue in for its finances. That's not so the case with almost every country, but in Russia it's really terrible, because most people don't make enough to survive. So how can you tax people that cannot survive? And the Russian government said, well, we always assume we get $80. Now we assume we get $40. Not really what they are going to get in. They get in, for sure I know, a bit less, but that makes no issue. They got a balanced budget now at $40 US oil. Well, that's a big difference from 80. So I'm pretty sure that means a lot of budget cuts and problems from that side. But hey, on the other side, they get it in. And they are selling more and more oil to China. Don't forget this. I mean, China is the biggest oil consumer. Russia is a big seller. And they can do it without a dollar because due to the support of the people in the east of Ukraine and from some person, the freedom fighters, from another person, the terrorists, they are, yeah, well, basically kicked out of the international society. So it's not that important that they are kicked out. The really interesting part is how they bypass the sanctions that they are no longer allowed to use the dollar. And now the interesting part is what will happen over after 6 months, because then Aramco is public, so the Saudi government is no longer in really big intent to push for a high oil price. The getting the shale oil guys out of business by a low oil price has worked not really. It worked for tiny bits, and new innovations basically got the energy reduced, production cost down. So that got all the great way. And Russia is not really working to cooperate. And fortunately, I see Iran is preparing for a proxy war in Lebanon. And yes, I feel sorry for the people in Lebanon and in Beirut. But for the people in Lebanon and Beirut who are listening, just a tiny question. Please ask your government to allow Israeli passport holders in. Just for fun. I mean, I wouldn't mind going in. It would be really fun. So on that side, and now, yes, I can't get in, so I got the wrong passport. It's terrible. But on the other side, it's not that terrible as in Kuwait, because there the international flag carrier denies Israel passport holders to get on board an aircraft. And the really, really, really terrible thing was this. There was a court ruling by a judge in Germany, of course in Germany, where else? In Frankfurt especially, where he said, this is allowed by law, it's not discrimination. I mean, if an airliner denies you flying because you don't have the proper visa, you didn't pay for your ticket, yeah, I understand. But if you want to fly from Frankfurt to Bangkok with a stopover in Kuwait, and just that you stay in the airport, yeah, I don't really understand it. I must admit that from an Israeli passport holder, I would not go the Kuwaiti rule way. I mean, go over China, go over Australia. I've heard the Falkland Islands are a great place. Just go over there, because you know the Middle East is not really your place. I mean, legally, officially, I mean, I got an Israeli passport, and officially, I am allowed into access Iran. Yeah, we all know that at the moment I do it, I will end up with my at the wall and get the firing squad in front of me when the sun gets up. But back to the oil field, these are tensions that are playing within the oils, within the OPEC. I mean, Kuwait is a member of the international, of the OPEC. And don't forget, if you want antitrust and consumer protection rules on it, OPEC is in a violation. So we could also simply say as people, well, OPEC, you're really nice guys, and we are really happy you have your head office in Vienna. But we no longer buy your oil. Cheers! Ooh, that would mean big problems. Because basically then no one really cares shit about it. Like, no one really cares about what's happening in Yemen, because there's a big genocide and manslaughter going on. And it's insane, it's not great, but it's terrible. Well, not really a funny moment on a Friday, but it's the truth, and we need to keep discovering and exploring the truth.
It happened. The United Kingdom is leaving the European Union. The people have spoken and created an unprecedented happening. This creates great investment opportunities. They are outlined in the Profitable Brexit Report. You can find it at hofprofit.com/profitablebrexit, and during the introduction week you receive a 50% discount. So join the highway to profitable Brexit momentum. hofprofit.com/profitablebrexit.
And it's time for have a look at another commodity, but it's not really sugar. Sugar is a soft commodity, and this is a hard commodity. Sugar is a soft commodity because it's grown and it's natural, and if you get it out of the ground, it's a hard commodity. That's basically the guidelines they gave me. And we're talking copper, because copper is needed for electricity, and electricity, you say, who cares? Well, think about this. Tesla. Yes, that's all I have to say. Everyone is talking now electric cars. Jaguar is getting an electric option for all its cars. Everyone is making joint ventures and partnerships. And there are big things to happen. I mean, only in the United States, you have now, I believe, 70 to 100,000 charging stations for electric cars. If they want to get the stations there, that they need for the current demand, especially due to Tesla, then they will need to scale it up to 500,000. And if they want to get to a nationwide network, they would have to go to 1,000,000. But let's get it from step to step. I mean, from 70,000 to 140,000 would already mean a doubling it. Well, if you would simply split that over 50 states, because Hawaii and Alaska are different cases, and not due to the maintenance. No, there are other nations. So, in Alaska, a small aircraft, and in Hawaii at the same case, it makes sometimes more sense for your day-to-day living. It's just, it makes sense. But in New York, LA, Seattle, yeah, well, in between, you can get it, especially now Tesla announced the truck. It's only a sad thing that Tesla failed from time to time to keep up the delivery. They need to deliver the goods that they sold, that they are selling. It's great. I mean, let me be clear. Tesla is a great company. They invent and are doing great things. And really, every country should have at least 1,000,000 Elon Musk people, because they're people like in the Apple commercial. They are not set for boundaries and they have no respect for the status quo. But they push the people forward, and it's a bit always what kept me always going. And I have from time to time, almost every time, I got my disagreements with the government and with almost everyone. But I always say, think to myself, hey, you're right. You did the honest thing. You're fair. And the only thing that you need to realize is this. You have no respect for the status quo. You will never get it. In the best case, they will be afraid of you. And they're afraid of you because you have them, you can nail it, and you're right. And that's all but when you will change it. But the interesting part on all the Teslas and all those cars and all those trucks and all the thing that they are inventing. And don't get me wrong, I mean, there's also a lot of great things in the electric sport cars that's happening. But what do you think about your electric private jet? That's also happening at the same time. And what they are now chatting, talking, and looking at is something easy. I am wondering where you'll get the power from, because by far it will mean more electricity. If you want an electric car, you need electricity. So that's something that makes sense. But most electricity in the United States is coal powered. The people, the Tesla, the greenies, the people that believe in climate change want green cars. They want green electricity. So you need to get green electricity, but how do you get it done? I mean, this is the interesting part, and this is where we're gonna make money. Copper will need more uses for a kilowatt hour or for a metric ton energy. Sorry, I'm so sorry for it. Now, copper needs more electricity. You need more copper for the electricity. You need more in solar. You need more offshore wind and an onshore wind at the same time. And don't get me wrong, at solar panels on the land, we are now getting to a model that's financially feasible. You can make money out of it. It's profitable. It's no problem. But now we have to need to have a big, good look. Where will the copper come from? Which mines are there? Because there is a lot of demand for copper and there's no big mine. And with mining, there's always a big problem. Where do you get it from? Because starting a mine is not like going to the supermarket and grab whatever you want and pay for it. It takes time. And that's the big, big, big thing. And that's why I think that for the next 2 years, you need to have a look at copper. And not really at copper contracts or go manipulating the commodity markets. Because the chance is pretty high that there is someone rigging the market anyway. It happens pretty often. So don't get into it. And yes, if it happens in the foreign exchange market, the gold, the silver market, the natural gas market, the oil market. Yeah, well, I will not say that it's happening at the copper market. But I would simply say keep your hands out and don't get rigged anyway. But there are great oil, there are great copper, and really, look at copper exploration companies, and Do your research, what has the management done, and check all those lovely things. All the listeners love to making some money, but you will have to pay tax upon your money. But that's to change. You can save on your tax. Pay no tax, completely legal. Start earning more money so you can take care for your beloved ones. So you can travel visa-free. Get yourself the tax-free passport. Get yourself the starting point to a tax-free lifestyle. A lifestyle which is an ultimate freedom. Hofprofit.com/passport. I say Hofprofit.com/passport. Yeah, I promise you to have a great lovely chat about Venezuela. And to be honest, there's nothing really lovely or great about it. The things that are happening in Venezuela are terrible. People are dying, kids are dying, babies are dying, and if you are living, having a kid, just think, do you think it's normal that your kid dies due to, problems? And I was just thinking what words I should use, because I don't want to spoil the interview. I must admit that I agree with most of it with my guest. It's really great. And I'm really happy to have him on. I found him via Mises.org. I sincerely hope that you go check out the Mises website. It's a great site, great resource, and Ludwig von Mises is a great thinker. And we should value the things that he has published. And on the interview, I would say, let's get the ball going, because let's get started. Here he is. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me on.
Hi, I saw on the Mises website that you wrote an article about the collapse of Venezuela, and you are a student from that area in the United States, if I'm correct.
Well, right now I'm working as a grassroots activist. I graduated from a university in Chile doing postgraduate studies about 2 years ago, and right now I'm currently working as a grassroots activist professional.
Okay, sounds like a lovely job. So basically you are trying to improve the world step by
yes,
step.
Yes, that is correct.
And definitely you have roots from Latin America. So what did happen in Venezuela? Where did it go wrong?
Well, that's a very complicated story. I was originally born in Venezuela and left when I was very young, right before Chavez came into power. The traditional narrative, which is partly correct, is that Hugo Chavez basically destroyed Venezuela with all of his socialist policies that he's implemented since he came into power in 1999 until his death in 2013. But the reality is development of socialism in Venezuela is part of a much longer process that took about 50 years since it reverted back to democracy in 1958. It had been governed by social democratic parties of different degrees of socialism, and for those 40 years before Chavez came into power, they gradually increased the size and scope of the government's power in economic and social affairs, to the point where Venezuela was one of the richest countries in the world in the 50s. But then by the 90s, it became very stagnant, and it created a lot of fiscal problems due to the large degrees of government intervention and spending that the country nearly went bankrupt, and people became distrustful of the two-party system at that time in Venezuela. And that allowed demagogues like Hugo Chavez to come into power and exploit the situation and eventually perpetuate himself in power until his death.
So basically what Hugo Chavez did, he got a country with problems, that could be fixed, and he turned into a country where people are bribing the customs to get their babies to feed, because otherwise they would die.
Yes, basically. He took a country that was at least fixable, that had bad policies, mm-hmm. but now has turned it into a failed state, and now people are living by the millions.
So, what's next for Venezuela? If you look at what's happening, people are literally dying. So, it's not really, what he did was not really a big success. What's needed to fix Venezuela?
The reality is it's very complicated. I think that there needs to be more international awareness of Venezuela from the international community. Both governments and NGOs and private citizens should try to help out the Venezuelan opposition as much as possible. And the unfortunate reality is the Venezuelan opposition, though, is quite socialist, and a lot of their policies that they propose, I believe, will not do enough to get the country back and running again. They need to basically, in my opinion, copy what Chile did after Salvador Allende was overthrown and implement far-reaching free market reforms.
And can you give us, our listeners, some examples of the reforms that Chile did and why it worked in Chile?
Yes. They, whenever Allende was deposed, Chile was facing considerable hyperinflation. It was burdened by heavy price controls and currency controls, as well as excessive degrees of government spending. And in addition, they had a lot of industries nationalized. So when the Chicago Boys gained favor with then dictator Augusto Pinochet, they proposed that they eliminate all price controls and currency controls, cut spending, cut taxes, privatize a large degree of the economy, specifically like the telecommunications and copper industry, as well as writing a new constitution that effectively limited the Chilean government in as far as its interventions in the economic affairs go.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and for our listeners, it's always handy to know that Chile is one of the biggest copper producers in the world. So it is, for a country with, I believe, 4 or 5 million people, really important for the government budget. But back to the Chile thing. So that they did this, and they slowly got out of the crisis and they got rid of the hyperinflation.
Yes, and actually, not only did they beat the crisis, but Chile, they've maintained more or less the model, despite the fact that after Pinochet left office, Chile has been governed by leftist governments. Despite that, they've still maintained most of the market model, and because of that, Chile is the most prosperous Latin American country and has experienced a degree of growth that's unprecedented in that region over the past 30 years.
And okay, so that's basically just caused because of the free market and people with common sense could operate their company and there was no bureaucrat wasting money on something that's not working.
Basically, it just shows the power of markets. When markets are allowed to work, people can become prosperous and build businesses, accumulate capital, and build the foundations for future generations to live in peace and tranquility.
It sounds like a lovely situation, but if you go back to the collapse, because Venezuela, Suriname, it's one big mess over in the Middle in Latin America at the moment. If we look at why are the people in Latin America, not only Venezuela, but a lot of countries, go for a leftist government that basically get them to see their baby die?
Well, this goes back to the foundations and the independence movements of these countries. The Latin American wars of independence were not really based on classical liberal ideas, say the American Revolution. So, when the colonial institutions characterized their countries before independence, but they actually sometimes reinforced them. And this too were demagogues and others, men known as caudillos, would solidify their power, eventually become fixtures in Latin American politics, where people tend to be attracted to demagogy opposed to rational policymaking that's based on the rule of law, limited governments, and free markets.
Okay, so it is really sad to see what's happening. Especially here in the land, formerly a colony called Suriname, and now biggest bank is busted and bankrupt, but could not repay its loan. So this crisis is there already. If you look at Venezuela and Chavez policies, what are the three worst pieces of policy they executed, and why?
I would say the price controls and exchange controls, along the expropriations, that he did the private sector. The price controls basically are the reason why Social Security these days, whenever you roughly set price very low, you also increase the demand. But this very artificially low price, suppliers will not in turn supply a lot because it creates a shortage. You see this with like the shortages and everything. With the currency controls, a situation where the economy not function because of that, there are not enough dollars in the economy. So corporations have to shut down. Most of these corporations deal with dollars since it's like the de facto currency of the world. And you see corporations like Ford shut down plant and big industrial centers like Valencia as well. And with regards to expropriations, it's a complete violation of property rights. Businesses get like they're pretty seized by government without any due process or inclusion. Thus, it creates a large degree of economic and business.
So the people in the side are basically the first three things, so that's it.
Good for you today.
Okay, that's great. So we mentioned, but from your comments, I think that the convention is that is a politics country.
I think it is pretty political. That is not really effective in gathering, but also is really public power.
And so pushing there are the movements.
There are some libertarian movements that have formed, and there is one opposition figure. And if you get a lot of people, become just like, but the Bushman opposition figures that tend to lean socialist as well. Mm-hmm. So there is a growing concern that the opposition leadership is not that good, and there is like a need for new blood from the more free market types that are growing by number each day.
So there is some there are good things happening at least. It's just sad that so many people have to die and flee their country for it first.
Yes, unfortunately, yeah, I had to take that. But I do think with the new Trump environment, because he has been vocal about the restoration of like democracy and like respect of human rights in Venezuela, that there might be like a change in international political opinion and across the globe in general that will eventually like pressure Venezuela to change its ways.
So, and what is for most of my listeners are in Europe and Asia, what is Trump exactly saying? Because you are living in the United States at the moment, so what is he exactly saying and why, what's he pushing for it?
Well, he has stated that he will not negotiate any type of deal with Venezuela until they restore democracy, and has called Nicolas Maduro a dictator and has criticized a lot of the phony elections that Venezuela has recently run, and has even said that a military option might not be off the table if the situation gets really, really bad.
Okay, and what do you think about what Trump said on Venezuela?
I generally agree with the statements that he made regarding Venezuela. It is a dictatorship, there's no question about it. I don't think there needs to be now because of the fact that I don't see it as a threat to the United States. It's a country that can barely feed its army to begin with, so they're not much of a threat. And I do believe they can be taken out domestically if the right amount of pressure internationally and domestically from the opposition is channeled. I believe that they can topple Maduro's government sooner or later.
That will be a great thing for the people living in Venezuela. I mean, in the Netherlands, we had a documentary about Venezuela, and they were talking about that you had to bribe the people in the supermarket to get basic food, like beans, corn, those things. It's insane, in my opinion.
Yes, it is. And unfortunately, there isn't much international coverage on the issue as much as there should be, because a lot of the media does have a left-leaning bias. So they will try to cover up as much as possible what's happening in Venezuela, or give an opinion saying that it's just a corruption and bad government, when it's really socialist policies that caused this whole mess.
Okay, and do you know in the world any example where socialism and a socialistic government worked?
I'd say there really aren't many, and many of the governments that people think are socialist, like the Scandinavian welfare states, are actually more market-oriented and tend to have much larger market features. They might have some socialist policies, but their prosperity was heavily built by capitalism. But when you look at the history of like socialism and communism, countries like Vietnam, China under Mao Zedong, the Soviet Union, Cuba, North Korea, just to name a few, they all collapse.
Yeah, it's interesting to see what happened. I was thought just to give it a go, and maybe you know anyone, especially from Latin America. But it's a system that fails, and that's good for the people. Only sad that people have to die for it. If you need to fix Venezuela, how would you fix it?
I would start with changing the constitution and having a much more solid constitutional framework that stresses limited government, free markets, and the rule of law. And then we can start by repealing all the price control laws, implementing a sound currency, and having like a free competition of money, essentially, and respecting property rights.
So basically, you would undo everything that the Chavez Maduro government did and get more, in my opinion, common sense and normal things in.
Yep, that is correct. And also undo a lot of the stuff that was done before Chavez, because a lot of people forget that Venezuela's petroleum industry was actually nationalized in the 1970s, and they created a huge power grab for the state to use to exploit, to bribe people with petroleum rents and make them dependent on the state. That's actually another reform I would say is the complete privatization of the petroleum industry and basically any industry that's been expropriated by the state.
Okay, and in the 1970s, when the government took the petroleum industry, did they ever privatize it again? Was there someone at a certain moment that they say, we give it back to the market, what we stole?
They didn't privatize, but they did compensate a good deal of American companies and several British companies when they decided to nationalize the industry. At the time, Venezuela was going, that was during the oil boom of the 70s, so the country didn't see like the bad effects of the nationalization policy. But it wasn't until the 80s and 90s that chickens came home to roost, as the government used a lot of this petroleum money to spend on lavish welfare programs that only encouraged dependency and just turned into complete waste. And eventually, like, the deficit problem became such a huge issue then that they had to try to implement a bunch of IMF reforms in the early 1990s that were not fully implemented.
Okay, so basically the framework for what to do in Venezuela is already there. They have somewhere the paper laying, collecting dust.
Yes, it's true. Socialism does not occur in a vacuum, and it's sometimes a process that takes multiple decades of intervention to eventually create a collapse. It's very similar to ancient Rome. Rome wasn't built in a day, and nor was it destroyed in one single day.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and do you have a final comment for the listeners about the situation in Venezuela or in general life at all?
Well, I would just say that I would take a lot of the information you see in traditional mainstream media outlets on Venezuela with a grain of salt. Mm-hmm. They do accurately depict the problems of like the scarcity and just the overall economic turmoil, but their analysis of the situation is sometimes lacking. They'll say like generic stuff like it's corruption or it's a dictatorship, while ignoring the fact that it's really the socialist system that's to blame for this mess, the interventionism, the really terrible assaults on private property, human rights, which is part and parcel of socialism. And they should be trying to get as many more perspectives on the issue as possible. It's the big case study of the failures of socialism in contemporary times.
Okay, then for that, I would say thanks for the interview.
Thank you so much for having me on.
It's an honor to have me on. One question. Well, with that, I would say a lovely weekend to you. I will talk to you again next Monday. I'm really happy to have you on as a listener. Please send me a tweet. I really look forward to hearing from you. You can leave a tweet to @LodewijkHof. You can leave a comment below on SoundCloud. You can simply just write down whatever you like. You can also send me an email, lhof@outlook.com. I will be more than happy to it. I am not sure that I will have the time or the capacity to answer you, but I read it anyway. And yes, also your lovely threads, because I am missing them. I will talk to you again on Monday, and have a lovely weekend, and let me know what you have done in your weekend.